I'm Peter Medlin, and you are listening to Teacher's Lounge from WNIJ, and if this is your first time hearing our show, I've got great news. It is based on a really simple idea that we've all had teachers in our lives who helped us become who we are today, and every educator we have on this podcast, whether teacher, coach, or professor, is nominated by the folks who listen. We want you to be a part of this with us, so please tell us about the educators who've inspired you and the folks in your community who deserve a spotlight. You can email us with your nominations at teachersloungeniu.edu. And today on the show, we are revisiting my 2022 conversation with David Gray. Don't worry, we will be back with a brand new episode next week. And this week, you can check out a new edition of our Teacher's Lounge radio show here on WNIJ. But anyway, David is a social studies teacher at Logan Junior High in Princeton, Illinois. And at the time of our conversation, he and his students were doing a project called The Four Freedoms and Beyond. It's based on President Franklin Roosevelt's 1941 State of the Union speech just before the U.S. entered World War II. And in the speech, Roosevelt laid out the country's stance, highlighted by the four freedoms, which are freedom of speech, freedom of worship, freedom from want, and freedom from fear. And Gray's students illustrated their interpretations of those freedoms. They had discussions about them, and they even had some community events in Princeton. And he says in the classroom, it was especially fascinating to hear how his students felt that we'd lived up to the ideals expressed in those freedoms or not. But we start off, though, talking about why, as a middle school teacher, David thinks middle school students still get a bad rap. I was curious, like, what do you find to be, like, the biggest misconception that people have about middle schoolers?
I mean, it is a tough age, you know? I think that's accurate. I think the biggest thing is, I think a lot of adults are scared of middle schoolers.
There's a fear.
There's a fear of them. But, you know, it's just a funny age because in some ways they're still kids and in some ways they're verging on adulthood. And from one moment to the next, you can be having a very adult conversation with them. And then the next moment they're doing something that is very childish. So it's kind of like it's a juggling act in a way.
So like that, it being like a very like transitory period for kids, that it's like kind of just makes it more unpredictable of how they're going to act.
Yeah, I would say that's accurate. And I think the challenge then for anybody who's teaching them is you almost have to live in both worlds at times. And part of it too is individual kids are kind of going through that transition and being in both places. And then you can have one student who's very mature and, you know, very ready for the next step. And then you have another student in the same classroom who is very much still working on coming out of childhood. So it's, I think that's the biggest challenge. They're not scary. I think, you know, it's been good because I found a spot where I fit and works for who I am. And, you know, I'm glad we have teachers that teach the younger kids because I don't know that I would have the skill set and the demeanor to do that. So.
Yeah, no, so you teach social studies. And I was thinking about like my own, you know, middle school experience, which I always have to remind myself like wasn't that long ago. You know, like I was in middle school like 15 years ago or something like that, which is a while, but like in the grand scheme of things, isn't that long ago. But I think about like with technology and things like that, how vastly different things are in like the social media age. Like there was no Instagram, there was no TikTok or Twitter when I was in middle school. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about like do you feel like in kind of the social media age, middle schoolers kind of come into your classes a little bit more aware of, you know, politics or news, or are they just kind of using social media like me to like, you know, watch fun cooking videos and sports highlights?
Well, I feel like there are more kids that are a little tuned in to, you know, political news stories. But that, I think that is still more if their parents are. You know, if their parents are tuned into it at home, then they tend to be more tuned into it. Mostly, I think they're using it for the entertainment side. I've always, even from the beginning of my career, which started, about 15, 16 years ago, there's always been a few kids in every group that are really into the politics. And, you know, they enjoy those conversations and even thrive on trying to create debates and stuff, which you know, can be a double-edged sword, but I don't know that there's very many more than used to be.
That's interesting. That makes sense, though, that like you said, that it's kind of like in the same way that it was in the past, if their parents were into it, they're going to be into it. It's just kind of the media that's changed
right.
and how they access that information.
Right.
That's really interesting. Yeah, you know, one of the things that I was thinking about a lot with this and the one of the first things I found when I was kind of trying to research for the interview was the Four Freedoms and Beyond project that you guys do.
Yes.
And I was curious, before we get into it, and kind of like explain to people, like again, for people that like aren't familiar with the Four Freedoms or anything like that, but before we dive into the actual like the project and what you guys do, can you explain a little bit about like just like what the Four Freedoms are?
Yeah, so so before the U.S. entered World War II, Franklin Roosevelt basically made a speech. I believe it was, I can't remember if it was his inaugural speech or it was the State of the Union.
I think I saw State of the Union.
Yeah, so that it must have been the 1940 State of the Union address. No, 41 State of the Union address. And in it, he basically laid out that if the United States were to be drawn into the war, this is the things we'd be fighting for, which were the Four Freedoms, which were freedom from fear, freedom from want, freedom of religion, and freedom of expression or speech. Basically, he was saying that if the United States is a part of this war, our goal will be to try and secure those freedoms for everybody in the world. And it's quite lofty, of course. But it's, I think it was his way of stating a purpose.
Yeah. And then Norman Rockwell ended up, I believe, like, getting commissioned or working on four paintings to kind of illustrate those four freedoms. And I think that like probably the sale of them went for like war bonds and like put on stamps and things like that.
Right. Rockwell became part of the, you know, the whole propaganda campaign to support the war effort and I personally like Rockwell's aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it does. It's kind of, you know, that classic Americana look.
Right.
So I enjoy looking at his artwork.
Right. So like those, it's interesting. Cause I had never, until I started looking into this, I had never heard of this speech. I had never heard of the Four Freedoms. And like the part of it that I thought was especially fascinating, right, is the two that are a little bit more lofty, the two that are a little bit more like aspirational, like, you know, the freedom from fear and freedom from want, right? And like I was thinking about it because it's like, you know, the first two, freedom of speech, freedom of worship or religion, like we know those two, First Amendment, right up there, things that we talk about all the time. But the other two, again, are like a little bit more vague, a little bit up to interpretation, and a little bit aspirational from like 1941 standards, but also in 2022. And I think it's so fascinating. And then again, with based on the projects that you guys are doing, which in part was around, you know, your students creating illustrations around those four freedoms, that I would imagine that it was probably a little bit more difficult for them to come up with ideas of how to represent, you know, freedom from wants and freedom from fear than it would be, you know, freedom of speech. You can, you know, throw some tape over someone's mouth, right?
Yeah. So when we did it last year, I allowed the students to pick which of the freedoms they wanted to illustrate. And we had definitely a lot more do religion and speech, again, because it's easier to wrap your mind around. In fact, I think we only had one student in all of my students who did freedom from want.
What did they draw or illustrate?
I don't even remember. It's been
right, because in the Rockwell painting, freedom from want is a picture of like a family sitting down to dinner and like putting like a big turkey on the table or something. And, you know, freedom of speech is a guy standing up at like a town hall meeting. Freedom of you know, religion or worship is, I believe, like a nun with a rosary and kind of a congregation or something to that effect.
Yeah, it was like three or four faces sort of in profile, and I think one of them was holding a Bible toward the front.
Right. Yeah. And freedom from fear is like two parents tucking in their kids. And yeah, I was fascinating about like the ones from either, you know, from wants or from fear that you thought were like especially interesting that the students that chose to try to figure those ones out went with.
Yeah, I guess I wish I would have reviewed these and looked at these again, but
I can tell you one that I saw that I thought was, this one seems like kind of exactly kind of hit the nail on the head when I was thinking about, because again, it's like, it is kind of lofty. It is kind of vague of how you interpret it. And the one that I saw the student did was like a kid standing out in front of their school, right? And with a backpack on, and the school's right in front of them. And you could see on the door of the school a little sign that has a gun on it and then kind of an X through that, which obviously everyone, you know, that's a picture, you know, is worth 1,000 words. Everyone understands exactly what that means when you put that on there. And I was like, that's, you know, heartbreaking, obviously, but exactly what they were trying to encapsulate with that.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I'm sure in 1941, 42, when Rockwell made the paintings, he had no conception of school shootings and kids having to worry about that, and certainly not in the United States. So,
right. So it's interesting to modernize it of what people are going to depict for that, because like again, like I think that in a lot of ways, the first two, you know, freedom of speech and freedom of religion or of worship, probably those paintings and what someone would paint now would probably look pretty similar too.
Yeah, because again, I think those concepts are a little more concrete. And of course, you know, between one person and the next, what they're afraid of could change. It could be different, you know.
Right, but like so much of it, you know, I think you can think about so much in American culture and like in modern American politics through the lens of, you know, fear and want. And like, it is really, really fascinating to look at how things have changed. And I was really fascinated by that.
Yeah. And it was interesting to see. I mean, a lot of the kids, you know, I told them, go ahead and look at, because the idea of reinterpreting the Four Freedoms or redoing Rockwell is pretty common, actually, if you look it up. So I had the kids go ahead and Google search and see what you can find to see if you can't generate some ideas. Well, a lot of them pretty much took those ideas and they became their own ideas. But a few of them, you know, kind of really made their own idea and concept. And those were pretty interesting to see. And again, to me, I think the freedom from fear ones were among the more interesting because it really was more of a look inside each student in a way that the other ones weren't.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You said it's kind of reimagining Rockwell or revisiting Rockwell is something that's pretty common. What was it that drew you specifically to this project?
Well, actually, it was the organization Midwest Partners in Town that was doing a community project with the artist Maggie Miners, who did a Rockwell study with photography. And if you get a chance to look at her interpretations, those are also interesting and generate some pretty good conversation. And I was kind of approached to see if there's any way we could connect this to stuff we're doing in class. And we used to do with our World War II studies, our World War studies, we used to do just propaganda posters. I'd have them just kind of recreate wartime propaganda posters. And I said, well, we can kind of switch gears a little bit and focus on the freedoms, which was good because it generated some good conversation about the Four Freedoms and you know, America's purpose in the war. And so that's kind of how I got into it, just to kind of connect with the community project at large. I think it was a good study. I think the kids valued it. And like, you know, you saw some of the artwork, we got some pretty good pieces. So,
yeah. And there was some larger, like you said that this was some other community groups were a part of this too, that there was some other, you know, community-based events that were a part of the whole series too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And, I didn't go to all of them, but, I went to a couple of the discussions. And most of those discussions were really generated and centered around, Maggie Miner's work. Mm-hmm. A lot of the same themes that we had in class about you know, what does this mean? You know, are these goals even accomplishable? You know, I think one of the early questions I asked is, you know, we won the war, but did we secure these freedoms? And then we even talked about, you know, Roosevelt was talking about around the world, have we even secured these freedoms here in the States effectively? And that generated some pretty interesting conversation from their viewpoint about where we were as a country and where we were, you know, as a world with, you know, freedom in general, but specifically to these four as well.
Freedom from wants and freedom from fear are more about like aspirational and like, who is it that we want to be in the future? And right, like from the lens of 1941 and World War II, that's fascinating. But then to kind of think about it, okay, we're in 2022. What's happened in the last, you know, 80 to 90 years? Have we made any progress on those things? And how has, you know, that fear changed is really fascinating. And I bet there were some interesting conversations, not only in your class, but in the kind of community about that.
Yeah. And I'm grateful that I was kind of brought on board because of those conversations. You know, one thing about teaching is you learn a lot too while you're doing it. And I think this project helped me not only make the thought process myself, you know, where are we, but kind of, again, it was kind of a lens into where they felt we were at, the students felt we were at with these things.
Was there anything, do you remember how they were feeling?
I think in a lot of ways they felt like we come up short, especially with the freedom from fear. I mean, school shootings did become part of our conversations. And
of course,
the idea that we're doing, you know, every year we're doing lockdown drills and talking about, well, what if somebody comes in to try and do harm? You know, when I was in school, I remember Columbine happening. Even after that, I never really thought about what happens in the school day if somebody comes into the building to do harm. And I feel like these kids are forced to reflect on that at times. And how could it not affect them?
For sure. Again, like I was saying, doesn't feel like it was that long ago that I was in middle school. And it was kind of an interesting point because it was, you know, in the late 2000s-ish where Columbine was far enough in the rearview mirror where it wasn't a, you know, huge topic of conversation on people's minds all the time. But then I remember being in high school when Sandy Hook happened. And then that's when I viscerally remember all the lockdown things starting, all those drills really becoming a part of the school day. And I think about like, okay, in middle school before that happened, how I would have interpreted, you know, freedom from fear. I have no idea. It's hard to even take myself back to that point in my life, at that point in middle school, of how I would have thought about freedom from fear and what that would have looked like for me.
I, you know, when I'm thinking about my growing up, I think the thing, and this might be weird, the thing I was most afraid of existentially was nuclear war, because I was old enough to kind of consciously remember the end of the Cold War. And of course, a lot of the movies that were popular at the time were centered around the Cold War. So kind of the idea of nuclear war was probably, school shootings was not something that was a big part of my mind, even though I was aware of them. I think Columbine happened when I was a junior in high school, maybe. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I know it's hard to think about it too, because it's like I probably something, you know, either nuclear war or some kind of natural disaster I would have thought about or something like that. Because it's like that was obviously during the peak of, you know, the Iraq war and the war in the Middle East. But it's like that was something that at least when you're, you know, in middle school and not someone that's watching, you know, television news every day or something, that it wasn't on the top of the conversation and it felt distant in some kind of way. So, yeah, maybe mine would have been some kind of nuclear related fear too, or just, you know, living in Illinois, a tornado or something.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I saw that there was kind of a local history connection that you guys found to the four freedoms too, right?
So yeah, so our school, Logan Junior High School in Princeton, all the way back in, I think, the 50s, would sell the Saturday Evening Post as a fundraiser. And as not just the Saturday Post, but the publishing company. I can't remember what the publishing company, they sold magazines as a fundraiser. And as a reward, if you met certain sales goals, they gave these plaques. Well, I guess over the course of 2 or 3 years, Logan Junior High earned all four of the plaques. And I didn't even realize it. And one day I'm walking through the hallway and I kind of look over, I'm like, those plaques look like Rockwell's paintings. So I took a little closer look. And then my wife, who was working for Midwest Partners on their end of the project, I kind of showed her the plaques, and then she kind of dug in and did the research about where they came from. And so that was kind of a serendipitous thing, because I walk by those plaques every day.
I say, and it wasn't like you had to dig them out of the basement or something. Like, they were already hung up.
Yeah, they're hung on the wall by one of the drinking fountains, and I was like, holy cow. So I took a picture of them with my phone and sent them to my wife. I said, do these look familiar or something like that? And so that led us to I think, an even greater connection, which was kind of neat. Sometimes those things happen.
Yeah, that's a pretty surreal moment as you're, you know, walking down the hallway.
Yeah. Again, especially since I've walked by him, you know, every day for the last 13 years, and I don't remember ever paying much attention to him before, but then that moment happened.
Yeah, I think I saw it too on the website that talks about the project. It must have been in the research that your wife found, that you guys found about, you know, how the school, you know, students were doing the fundraiser back in the day. And this is like probably like in the early 1950s or something like that.
Something like, I think it was the 50s. Yeah, 50s. I think it was like over 2 or 3 years.
Right. Yeah, and I think I saw that, like, yeah, so like every year they earned a different one. And the thing I thought was funny too is that, like, the first year that they won, like the first two that they give out are like, they start you off with the freedom of speech plaque and they start you off with the freedom of religion one next. It's like you have to get 3 or 4 years deep before they give you the more, you know, interesting, that the freedom from want and the fear ones.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it a project you guys are thinking about continuing in some form, or are you guys going to pivot and find something new for that?
I think we'll continue it in some form, yeah. Because I think highlighting the four freedom speech, again, it's abstract in a way and it's idealistic in a way, but it really speaks to the question of, you know, who we are as a country, what do we want to be as a country. It allows for those deep conversations. And I think in a way that's kind of safe, because it's not really politically controversial, I think.
Right, because so much as it is up to how you interpret those ideals.
Right. And I think it allows us to evaluate the values of our country in a way, whether we're living up to our stated values. It just allows for a lot of conversations around the speech, the artwork, and the values, again, the values around it. So,
yeah. And it's like people talk all the time about just general, even though like these ideas are a little bit more personal and up to your interpretation. Like, so often in this country, when we talk about freedom, we leave it at that, just, you know, freedom. And like, that is so vague to the point where it kind of almost means nothing when we talk about it. But yeah. Like, at least the framing devices of, you know, speech, or especially those last two, right? Like, from fear and of want, allow you a lens into that conversation in a way that I think people don't necessarily talk about all the time when they talk about just this general idea of, do we have freedom?
Right. In what level of freedom do we enjoy? I can say what I want, right? I have the freedom and the ability to say what I want, you know, within certain boundaries. But if I'm afraid to go to school because of X, Y, and Z, what level of freedom am I actually enjoying, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's really fascinating. And so yeah, so you said that you've been in Princeton for 13, 14 years or so?
Yeah, I started my career nearby in DePew, and taught there for 3 years. And then I was fortunate to get the job here in Princeton. It's my hometown, and my wife and I were already living here. So it's kind of nice to work about 6 blocks from where you live. So.
Oh, so you grew up in Princeton? Do you like went to school there too?
Yep. Yeah, I'm born and raised here and graduated high school here. And the classroom I teach in now, I had 7th grade social studies in, so.
Oh man, what was that feeling when you first went back?
It was surreal because a lot of the teachers that were my teachers in junior high were still teaching. They were kind of on the tail ends of their career, but.
I get to call them by their first name now, yeah.
Yeah, and that was funny because I had one teacher who I called by his last name, and he kind of chuckled at me and, you know, indicated it's okay to call me by my first name, but it was still kind of weird for a little bit. But by the end of it, you know, you feel more like a colleague than a student after a couple of years, which it was really great to get to see them sort of on a different level and get to know them on a different level.
Yeah, for sure.
In many ways, because I was still early in my career, they were still teaching me, but it was teaching me how to be a professional and how to be a teacher. And I absolutely value that time. And in a lot of ways, I miss those teachers that have retired and are no longer teaching with us. But
have you had the point where has it full circled yet? Have you had any students that you had 15 years ago come back around as a colleague?
We've had some paraprofessionals or classroom aides that I taught.
Right.
We had one of my colleagues had a student teacher that I taught when she was in junior high. And now I think she's got a job up in the suburbs, which is, it's pretty cool to see that. It's cool to see them grow up because there's a lot of changes between 13, 14 years old and, you know, early 20s. So yeah, that's kind of a neat aspect of it.
Right, for sure. Yeah, it's like I feel like some teacher I talked to a while back put it where it's like, because I think that he was the same thing where the former student that he had ended up working with him as a colleague later on currently and was like, yeah, as a teacher, 98% of the time, you know, you plant these seeds and you nurture them and then you send them off into the next year. And a lot of times you kind of never hear from it ever again. So it is really cool when you do get the opportunity to see how everything turned out and see the kind of person that they became.
Right. Yeah. And it's one of the more rewarding aspects of education is when you hear stories of students that are being successful and you know, making it in life, if you want to put it that way. It's rewarding. Even if you're just telling yourself you are one small part of that, it's still, it's especially rewarding to see a student who struggled in the years they were with us to grow and turn out not only okay, but to be, you know, really making it in life. It's I enjoy that part.
Yeah. Was being a teacher something that you always wanted to do, you know, from back when you were in school, or was it something that came to you a little bit later on?
I wasn't always thinking of being a teacher, although when I reflect about it, I probably should have because, I always enjoyed being in a leadership role and I always enjoyed mentoring younger people. Mostly that was through athletics when I was in school, but when I went to school, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I just knew I liked history and I wanted to study history. So I went to be a history major and then I'm like, okay, so what can I do with a history major? And education was one of the most common things to do with history. So that's kind of the path I went down and it's the way it's worked out, I guess. So
yeah. Once you kind of in college, you kind of dipped your toe into education and thought like, maybe this is something that could work for me. Was it instantaneous that you were like, oh, this is a great fit or did that take a little bit of time too?
Yeah, I don't know that I realized that it was gonna fit or work really until I think I did my student teaching. You know, you get you do your undergraduate education courses, and you talk a lot of educational philosophy and hear the philosophers' names and go over things like Bloom's taxonomy and
of course,
and even talk in psychology classes, all those psychology studies about human behavior. And so you do a lot of that. But you really, your experience in a classroom and actually standing in front of kids really is limited until you do your student teaching. And that's really, I think that's really where you find out whether it's going to work or fit or not. I don't know any other way to do it. If I'm being honest, other than there's a little trial by fire, you have to step into the fire to see if you can stand it or if it fits.
I think that's the case for so many things too, though, right? Like I remember for me in journalism, it was like I spent 2 years at a community college not really knowing what I wanted to do. And then it was like, okay, I know I can write. I know I'm pretty interested in politics. I know I'm kind of interested in these things. Then once you transfer, you're like, okay, well, you're a junior. It's time to declare a major now. And I just kind of had a best guess. And then luckily once you finally get into those classes and get to do some student media related stuff, and like you said, once you actually do the work, there's kind of a sigh of relief where you're like, oh thank God, I was right. That did end, this is what I want to do. But until you get to that sink or swim moment, there's always a party that's like, hope I guessed right on that one.
Yeah. And I think that was kind of it. When I got the student teaching, It was, yeah, there's going to be challenges, but I enjoy what I'm going to enjoy what I'm doing, and I'm going to feel like I have a purpose, every day. So it was, I don't know if it was a single moment, like aha moment, but over that semester of doing that, it was definitely the realization that this is what I was sort of called to do. So,
right. I mentioned that you got nominated to be on our show. Someone reached out and said, you got to talk to David. And, every educator that we have on is, and I'm sure that you had a teacher or a coach or someone at some point in your education journey that you feel like kind of just made a big impact on you, helped you become the person that you are today. So I'm curious, when we say that, is there anyone particularly that comes into mind, or a few people?
Well, I can say that I feel like overall I had great teachers. I think I would like to think that they all played a role, but there's one that I think probably stands out, and that's Mrs. McVitie, Elaine McVitie. And she's pretty legendary in these parts, because I think she's had a huge impact on a lot of students. But I think, I've always had an interest in history, like I said, and she was my history teacher in high school. But just to see, I think just to witness the amount of fun she had and the passion she had for teaching and learning, and she encouraged my growth. I think she would probably be the one that probably had the biggest impact on making, encouraging me or sort of making me want to be a teacher.
And she taught history?
Yes. Yeah.
I think I took
her class. I think I had a class of hers every year of my 4 years of high school too. And I almost purposely said, I need a McVitie class this year, so I'm going to make sure I get one.
I'm sure she's inspired a few history and social studies teachers over the years.
She did. I've even heard a couple other people who went into education who mentioned her as part of their inspiration. So
was she retired from the district by the time that you got there, or did you get a little McVitie crossover by the time that you got back?
So yeah, she was still teaching in the high school when I got back. And even then, she's always a teacher. Every time I met with her, she was always imparting some lesson or wisdom, whether it was about something historic or obviously when I started teaching, there was a lot more advice or teaching me about, how to do certain lessons or how to, handle certain situations, or so it became more about, teaching me about teaching, which was pretty cool. I value all of those conversations.
So. Yeah, that's awesome. You mentioned that like athletics was a big part of it for you too, and you're a coach now, right?
Correct. I coach the soccer programs, both the girls and boys soccer programs at the high school.
Oh, both. So that's cool too, because like you get to again, like the kids that you had in middle school, you kind of get to follow them over and have them again.
Yeah, it's and I would say it's, you know, the relationship I build with the soccer players is pretty special. Obviously, you get to know them as seventh, eighth grade, junior high students, and then you're with them quite a bit over the next 4 years, and watch them become adults. And they do. I mean, there's a big difference between a freshman in high school and a senior in high school, and to sort of see that in a way, they, like you use the term full circle, in a way they sort of come full circle, and grow up. And again, it's rewarding to see that that growth. Obviously, our conversations are different at the soccer program than when we're in a history class, but yeah, it's a good time. I enjoy it.
And the girls they won like a regional championship last year, right?
Yeah, we won a regional last year, and then we actually won the sectional 2 years ago. So hopefully we can stay competitive, and you know, our goals, I think, are the same.
There you go. Shout out to the Tigers.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, I've only got a few more for you, and then I'll let you go. But hey, thanks again for taking some time out of the afternoon.
No problem.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, the last few questions we had are kind of the ones that we ask at the end of all of our interviews, and you might have answered it throughout the course of our conversation. I just kind of like the way that these frame things to kind of wrap up, which is like, I'll ask it for, you know, specifically for social studies and history, and then I'll ask it for just teaching and coaching in general. But, you know, what's something about teaching social studies that you just wish more people knew, something that you think is more important than people might realize?
Well, I mean, people, you know, the famous saying, those who don't learn their history are doomed to repeat it. I think that's kind of a simplification of what really happens. I have a friend of mine that I spend quite a bit of time with and have a lot of conversations with. He says history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. And I think that's because human behavior stays mostly the same over time. So I think you can learn patterns of behavior from history, patterns of group behavior from history, that certainly those lessons can be applied to how we handle situations presently.
Yeah. I mean, even if you think about, like, you know, the freedom from want, the freedom from fear from 1941 to now, fear is still there, just might look a little bit different, just kind of rhymes a little bit.
Right. Right. Exactly. I think if you just think history repeats itself, then you look for it to actually repeat itself. But if you think of it more as it's similar, it's not the same, then you can see the patterns of behavior. And I think some outcomes do become predictable. And I think people who have that knowledge and ability can sort of not predict the future, but certainly have a good idea of what might come next.
That was my 2022 conversation with David Gray, social studies teacher at Logan Junior High in Princeton, Illinois, about the four freedoms and beyond. And like I mentioned up top, we are back with a new episode next week. Thank you so much for listening to Teacher's Lounge. In the meantime, feel free to nominate a teacher in your life to be on the show. It's how we get all of our great guests like David. Please send them our way to teacherslounge@niu.edu. Wherever you're hearing the podcast, please subscribe or leave a rating or share it with a friend. It's the best way to get even more perspectives on the show if you like what we do. A big thank you to the Northern Illinois band Kind Ofs for the music you hear each and every episode of this show. And I have been your host, Peter Mudlin. And like I said, we'll be back with more Teacher's Lounge next week. See ya.